This program is brought to you by Cabinet, a nonprofit arts organization based in Brooklyn, New York. Cabinet depends on your support to continue our activities. For more information, visit us online at cabinetmagazine.org.
The following recording is of the fourth installment of Talk Show, a set of events dedicated to exploring professions whose intricacies are often wondered at but rarely explored. Talk Show is hosted by David Levine and features sideman Eben Clem. Guests for the fourth installment, a belated Christmas special, were taxidermist John Youngaitis, professional Santa Claus Frank Pascuzzi, and Nikki Columbus on interspecies animal friendships. It took place on January 26th, 2012.
So, welcome to Talk Show number four. As you could tell from the Yule log and my sideman's headgear, this is our Christmas special.
Happy holidays, David.
Happy holidays, Evan.
Happy holidays,
and to all a good night. If you guys haven't been here before, it goes something like this. This is a talk show about New Yorkers with interesting jobs, which is to say we never invite artists to talk. And the way it works is like this. This is my sideman, Eben Clem, who's been serving you drinks. There's interviews. I'll interview our guests for 10 minutes, and then you guys get to ask questions to our guests for 10 minutes. There's also a segment called Minor Obsessives, which tonight will be executed by Nikki Columbus, which is a slide talk about something that you're generally thinking about when you should be thinking about your interesting job, but you're not.
One of our first returning guests, which is very exciting.
Yeah, Nikki, yes, indeed. Welcome back, Nikki.
We've done this long enough that we actually have returning guests.
It's like a Christmas family reunion, see? And at some point in the night, Eben makes a new cocktail for every talk show. This began because Evan was originally a guest, since he has a very interesting job inventing cocktails. And at some point in the night, we will have we'll tell you what the ingredients are, and you guys will think about it a little bit. And at the end of the night, we'll have a naming contest for this brand new drink that Evan has invented, and we'll vote on it. And that is the official name of the new cocktail. So, tonight is our Christmas show, and I just got back from Berlin, because we're on Christmas break now, and I'm really looking forward to... I'm Jewish, but somehow my family always gets really, really into Christmas, and, you know, I got this suit for it, and because I got obsessed with the Bing Crosby, David Bowie video, and I just felt like I should be a little Christmassy.
There's
actually an edit. Joseph Beuys was actually at that session, and he also sang with them, but they kind of cut it out because he's actually turns out to be a really terrible singer, which there is also video of on YouTube. And so we were thinking, okay, it's our Christmas show. We want to have sort of Christmassy guests. So tonight, I was thinking a lot about like those beautiful crèche things, and you know the sort of you know. Family of God's children and all the animals and stuff. So tonight we have taxidermist John Youngaitis. And then Nikki will be giving a presentation on a slide talk on interspecies animal friendship, which seems very much in keeping with the season. And then we'll close with Santa Frank Pascuzzi, who is a professional Santa, a department store Santa. What are you guys all doing for Christmas?
David, it was a month ago. Sorry.
Oh. Okay, well, without further ado, I want to introduce the owner and proprietor of the Cypress Hills Taxidermy Studio. He is New York City's last taxidermist, John Youngaitis.
All right.
How's it going?
It is going. I don't think
be this many people. It's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
Actually, I'm not shy, so we're going to be all right.
All right, cool. Given your line of work, it probably...
Yeah, well, I meet a lot of different people, you know? Relatives, pet owners. And now, it seems in Brooklyn, taxidermy is becoming collectible. Like, a lot of people don't want to hunt, but they like having taxidermy. So people find their old, beat-up taxidermy, bring it to me to refurbish it. A lot of tattoo shops, bars, it's becoming like taxidermy came back into vogue. Instead of building new taxidermy, I can just repair old amounts, which is fine too. It's a living. You
know? Is that different?
Well, the animal's already built. Just a matter of how old it is, how beat up it is. You know, if you know the mechanics of it, you can always put it back together.
Why don't you tell us the mechanics of it?
Okay. Basically, taxidermy, you have a dead animal. Right? Start with a dead animal.
Hopes.
Most of the time, right? Actually, the weird story when I was a kid, but that's... I can talk to you guys for hours. But anyway, you take the dead animal, you're removing the skin. Look at my girl, she's giving it. She thinks I'm going to screw up. Anyway, you're taking the skin off, you make an artificial body, skin goes back on. The skull, usually keep the skull because it helps with anatomy, leg bones help with anatomy, there's metal rods, you know, different gauge wire goes in for support, glass eyes, it's clay for modeling because the face always has to be modeled. Bigger animals need tanning because the skin is very thick. Small animals, birds, small animals, you don't have to. I can just mount them start to finish. If somebody brings me a deer head, I take the skin off, I saw the antlers out of the skull, with a piece of the skull. The skin gets tanned, the company's selling artificial, it's come a long way. Here we go. The taxidermy started with the real skull with a piece of wood, and you had to wrap it with Excelsior, which is like a shredded wood, to build the animal. Now, with plastics, the anatomy is like, there's veins in the face, the anatomy is like perfect. Anybody can do museum quality if you're halfway good at it. Whereas years ago, you could never get this kind of quality. And it's, so basically, you get a mannequin back, and the skin goes back over it. There's wood in there, so the piece of horn, which is like sort of cut across here and down, and that gets screwed in. You have ear liners, which is also plastic, which used to be cardboard, and you sort of curl and bend up. Originally, it was lead. You ever see an old mouse sometimes, it splits, and there's lead inside. They use a lead liner.
Whoa.
Yeah. Well, what, it's different times.
What was your first animal?
As a kid?
Yeah, like, I mean, your dad ran the studio, right?
Yeah, it was my father's business.
Right.
Which he apprenticed as a kid, worked in the city. The city was loaded with taxidermy, so it had to be like five in Brooklyn alone back 40s, 30s, 40s.
Because people were hunting nearby?
Yeah, hunting was big. Everybody came from Europe, Italian, German, and they brought hunting with them because it was sort of like a tradition there, and they brought it came to America, and America had... As soon as you went to Westchester, it was all woods, hunting was, there was tons of hunting, you know? So, plenty of taxidermists, plenty of work. My father, in the 60s, used to get maybe 80 deer heads. I don't get 20.
Wow.
Because hunting is like, unfortunately, the younger generation, which, it's all video games. Nobody wants to hunt, like they're rather playing, like, virtual reality.
Do you hunt?
Oh yeah, I hunt too, yeah.
Yeah?
Hunt fish, it's anything outdoors. Riding a motorcycle, anything outdoors I'm in.
So what was your first animal? Like the first one your dad let you do?
Basically, I would help with the skinning. Start to finish. Assembly is harder than skinning.
Okay.
Because removing the skin is just the mechanics of it. Putting it back is the art part. So as a kid, he would just say, practice on this, practice on that, take this animal apart, you know, and that's how I started.
Was there ever?
A little kid. I got pictures of a little kid, like 5, 6 years old. It's fascinating, you know? I get to see all these animals.
Was there ever a moment when you, like, I mean, because a lot of time when you go into your parents' profession, there's a moment, like, you know, when you're a teenager where you're like, I want to do something else.
No. I knew as a kid, I used to go to my cousins, and they were a little old, and they were like, well, what are you going to be when you grow up? And it's like, I'm going to be a taxidermist. You'll grow up, you'll forget about that. It has never changed. To this day, I just love taxidermy.
Do you do it the same style? Are there styles of taxidermy? Or, like, I mean, do
as
you...
As far as...
Well, I don't know, do you feel like... If someone who really knew what they were doing, could they distinguish a deer head that your dad did as opposed to a deer head that you did? Or?
If it's done right, no, because you look at like museum work, which is done in the 30s and 40s, it's as good as anything today. You can tell a good one from a bad one, like any craftsman, you can tell if something, you know. It's a lot of things with symmetrics with the face, the eyes have to be right. You know, if certain things are out of whack, a better taxidermist, that won't happen. If somebody's right. Just learning the craft,
are there legendary masters? Like, is there a Stradivarius of taxidermy people, like, that people collect, that is their
favorite? No, years ago, there were certain guys that worked in the museum that were known by the world. Now, there was a show for a while called Mouth in Alaska that was on, and those guys are pretty good. It was a show, like a show on cable. I don't think it's on anymore.
Oh, it was a taxidermy?
Yeah, it was on for a couple of years. And it was like, they were just getting all this exact stuff. It was pretty cool for me. Even for me, I was enjoying watching it. And these guys are pretty good. But big money, you're getting the best guys, you're going to get the best work, you know?
What's the weirdest thing you ever preserved?
Okay. I'll tell you one I did, and one I got a phone call. This is pretty weird. I did work, you know the slideshow down in Coney Island?
Yeah.
So a lot of you guys have probably been there. It's pretty cool. Well, Serpentina Snake had died, the big python, and she wanted to preserve it. So I did the skin on a long piece of wood, which if you go in it, you're going to see it. So through that, I get a call from this guy and his wife. I keep the names out. He was a sword swallower. He had an act, the two of them, right? So his dog dies. He tells me he wants a dog done. It's like a big dog. I'm like, well, what do you want to do? He goes, I want the head mounted on the wall like a wolf with the mouth open. I want three legs set up with metal rods for a stool that he could sit on. And the fourth leg, he wanted the handle of his sword that he swallowed. So I did. I could build it. So, yeah, I built this for him.
Wow.
I mean, I was his pet, you know? It's kind of like, I'm a dog lover. I had pets and everything. But that's what he wanted. So that's what I built for him. So that's a little unusual, right? I would say.
Do you ever have a moment where you're like, whoa, this should not be getting mounted?
No, it's a challenge. Anything's a challenge. Yeah.
No fish, no birds.
Yeah, everything.
Yeah?
If it crawls, swims, flies, it's been through the shop. Even including lizards with bird wings, two-headed animals. A lot of times you see the two-headed things. They're like the sideshow baits, most of them. There are real ones, but I can make a two-headed anything.
Do you get a lot of requests for that?
Once in a while. And what's the other ones? Jackalopes, the little horned rabbits from that west, they don't exist. You can make them, but they don't exist. People say, oh, I've seen them. It's like, you did? Yeah. We'll be smoking.
But you never stuffed your own pets? You never mounted your own pets?
No, I stuffed my big snake. I had a big python. It grew like 16 feet, a big reticulated python. And that I have the skin. I just preserved the skin because it was so freaky big. And it was like a dinosaur. I just wanted to keep the skin. So I had a tan skin just to keep that, you know.
So in the studio, there's just these, do you have specimens in the studio?
Oh, yeah, it's like a showroom. You know, it's a lot of work that's me and my father did that just worked to decorate the place. There's unclaimed work and new work that's waiting to go out. So if you go in there, but you know, there's a lot of stuff on which people want to see, too. You know, if you bring something in, you want an idea of what I'm building, you know, to compare. So.
And your studio is in East New York?
Yeah, in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
The last of the boroughs, man, it's amazing. It's just... Because hunting has just like dwindled over the years, so there's less demand, you know. And that's not a full-time job for me. I got to work another job.
Oh, well, even with the revival of
deer. Yeah, well, there's only so many people collecting old taxidermy to fix how much, you know.
But you never thought of moving, because there's competitive taxidermy, right? Like upstate?
If I go upstate, there's more guys. If I go out Long Island, there's more guys. People say, oh, go to Pennsylvania. But then it's competition.
Right.
In Brooklyn, I got the lock.
True enough.
Even though there ain't a lot of it, I'm getting pretty much everybody calls comes in, you know. So that helps.
Is it lonely? Being the last taxidermist?
Like not really. If I wasn't the last, I wouldn't be here, would I? If I was just a taxidermist.
Actually, you know what? You might be. You might be, yeah. Actually. Yeah, no, because you probably would have been, actually.
Yeah, either way, I would have been.
Yeah. So what do you think of movies like, Psycho? Like, because taxidermists get kind of a bad... Well, he stuffed his mother, he did some amateur
in
stuff with birds.
They always portray taxidermists as weird, ghoulish guys. And it's always black and white with the head, like, twisted, looking out. It's always, like, demonic. And yet, it's like, people tell me it's art, so... And I, you know, okay, basically, taxidermy for hunting is a record of the hunt. It's a lot. If you go out in the woods, you spend a lot of time freezing your ass, you're trying to wait for something to come along, it's your skill. You can go into any guy's house that caught like a deer, caught a bear, caught a pheasant. It could be 10, 15 years. You can say, what's the story of that thing? He'll tell you the day, the weather, what it took to catch this animal. It's kind of like it keeps the memory alive.
Yeah.
It's not just killing an animal. Oh, I killed an animal. It's the whole thing. Like a memory, you know?
Do people do it for, like, pet, like, other than the sword swallower? Like, people do it for pets they
yes.
really love?
A lot of birds, parrots, parakeets. Occasional dogs and cats, which a lot of times they don't come back. The thing dies. Oh, my baby, they're crying, which it's sad because their pet died. They miss it. But then by the time the job's done, which it takes at least a month or two for the thing to be done, either they got a new pet or they don't want to see it again. So I usually get stuck with a lot of pets.
How much does it cost to do a house cat?
Okay, a cat would be $500.
Like, what, $500 for you or $500 for the client?
$500 for them.
And for, okay, 500 for them, and for supplies and like labor.
Well,
like,
see, you know, like, it's more of a labor.
Yeah.
Taxidermy is more labor than material.
How long does a cat take?
If you brought me a cat, within a
month. Just for instance.
Right, so. If you brought me Fluffy, it would take about a month to get it back. It's an, okay, once you build it, you set it up, and it's an air drying process. So you can't put it in the oven and speed up the process. It has to dry. It's an air drying thing. Bigger animals take longer. Small, like a, you can do a bird in 2 weeks, a bird is dry, and it's like a parakeet would be finished.
And then you just fill it with sawdust or?
No, it's an artificial body.
It's an artificial
little
body.
Animals, I make my own body.
Okay.
The bigger animals, artificial, like, you know, the styrofoam. Smaller from pheasant, from fox, raccoon, I can make, because like, this is old school. I learned old school from my father. I can build a body from scratch. Because every animal's a little bigger, a little smaller. The companies don't give you, they give you a variety, but it's not that much wiggle room, you know, whereas I can make the exact size of the body that the skin came off of, and then when the skin goes back on, that's the same size the animal comes off.
Okay, but generally bigger companies, they just give you molds.
Well, yeah, because they're cranking, you know, it's, you'll get, like I say, if you want a fox, you're going to get a certain size body. It could be a little bigger, a little smaller, whereas I can make it exactly, which is the old school, which is the way I learned, to make the body from scratch.
Did you ever think of working for a big company, or?
That's why you get a call, you know, but I was just like being, you know, being my own boss. It's like if you work for yourself, you have a different discipline. You're not looking at, oh, 8 to 5, I'm out of here. It's like it could be 9, like the other night, waiting to go out, this guy calls me 9 o'clock, can I come? It's like, I'll wait for you. So it's, if you work for yourself, it's different. You're in more control, which is kind of cool. And
yeah.
You know,
I bet most people in this room, like myself,
yeah.
Got some of their first love.
Yeah.
Yet, if somebody tried to do that today, there'd be riots, I imagine.
You think?
Don't you think that if people started like, shooting up a whole set of new elephants and rhinoceroses and
well,
and
see, elephants. Certain animals are endangered, certain animals ain't. Like white-tailed deer are all over New York State, and everybody says, oh, you know, the deer. But originally, you had predators. You had wolves, you had coyotes. Certain animals kept the deer population in check. But farmers, because they would kill their animals, the farmers said, oh, the wolves got to go, the mountain lions got, everything's got to go. So we became the predators to keep the balance in nature. But now you got less hunting. You ever notice you go say, now you see deer like on the side of the road getting mashed by cars, like more than you used to see? It's because they're overbreeding their territory. There's only so much food per acreage for animals. Without the predators, they're going to eat themselves into, and everybody's going to be hungry. So hunting became, you know, to keep the animals in check. Plus, you know, you kill an animal, you're getting the meat done. It's like, it's not going to, you're not killing it. It's like, oh, kicking, oh, look at that thing, I got it. You're getting the head done. Sometimes you want the skin for a rug. It's saving everything, you know? So it's not going to waste.
What would you most, what's the animal you've never done that you would love to do?
That I've never done.
Or is there?
I don't know, because when I was a kid, my father had a contract with an importer for exotic animals for zoos. And everything from lion, tiger, elephant, everything came through the door back then. This was back in the 60s. So I pretty much had my hands on every kind of animal. I think albino. Anything albino is kind of cool. Because it's like one in a million animals comes out albino. So you don't get too many albino animals.
Have you gotten any?
Albino. Yeah, I've done a few over the years, but that's rare.
So that's exciting.
Yeah, because it's something different. It's like anything unusual like that. But other than that, I think just about every other animal. It's...
Do you ever get bored?
No. It's because every animal you look at it, like you see the potential. And then, you know, person wants a certain position, they want a natural wood, and you got to go and get the wood. So it's always like it's a process that keeps you.
Do you do the sets too if they want something?
Like a diorama, you mean?
Yeah.
Like a natural base. I never did like the whole diorama thing for a house, but you know, you want the base, the animal to look like it's walking in the forest. So you want a piece of wood, you want like stuff on there, you know? So it's all part of the.
Do clients, are clients ever like, I don't like that, can you do it again?
There is no doing it again. it's once it's done, I mean, if you technically you could do it over, but you're not going to do it over. It's, if it's, you know, sometimes that's why when I, let's say, someone brings something in, I write out what's the position, exactly everything you want. Because this way you're getting back, you can't say, I didn't say left turn, say read your receipt. And with fish, and with certain animals, guy catches a fish, 10-inch fish. Now he's telling his friends, I caught a 12-inch fish, I caught a 14-inch fish. By the time he's coming to me, the fish now is 20-something inches. And he looks at his fish and goes, what happened? I said, look at your receipt. Oh, yeah. And the same thing with the ants. The antlers, you know, they come like 1 point, 2 points, 3 points. He's bragging to his friends, it's an 8-pointer. It ain't an 8-pointer. I have to write down exactly how many points on the receipt. Because the story got bigger on the television. Now you get back to the
and then you gotta hide it.
Yeah,
right. Do you guys have any questions?
Why did it take so long? Months?
Months, because, like I said, after you build it, it has to air dry. The skin is, like, if you speed, you can't put it in the oven and speed it up, or just distort and twist. So air drying is a slow process where it stays in the position.
But do you leave it in, like, the parking lot and back, or like?
Huh?
Oh, yeah, in what position?
Yeah, how do you hang it up?
No, it's got the, like I said, it has wires running in it, wires of support, wires come out of the legs, or the, you know, feet, whatever, into the base. It's locked in, so the wires would hold it up.
It has to dry in the position.
In the position that I set up. Then, like birds, you would card the wings to keep all the feathers in line. You know, and the ears have to be carded because they would tend to curl if you don't, like, support them. Once it dries, it'll stay. But when it's soft, it has to be supported. You know, anything that would move, even though the body ain't moving, but the extremities are moving.
What's the largest thing you ever did the whole body of?
Largest thing would be me and my father did a big grizzly bear that was like over 9 foot.
Whoa!
We couldn't get out the door. We had to take the door and the molding to get out of the shop. Because we built in the shop, and when it came to the day, it was like, this thing ain't fitting out. So we started taking the, yeah. And they sent us, yeah, go ahead. No, you.
Oh, me? Yeah. Oh, sorry. So I have a friend who had a French bulldog, and she always said, she's from Wisconsin, she always said when the bulldog died, she was going to have it stuffed. But then when the bulldog died, unfortunately quite young, right. She went to a taxidermist and said, look, I can make the French bulldog look like the like perfect example of a French bulldog, but it's still not going to look like your dog. Do you agree with that, or do you think it's
okay, with pets, it's a little tricky because they have expression. Like when you do, I always tell people if I bring pets, I say, bring me a couple of pictures. Because maybe like one ear's up, like it's me with rabbits. I got two rabbits, both black and white. One rabbit had ears up and one rabbit had ears down. Same exact looking rabbit from two different people within a month. It's like weird that that happened. But look, and then you, like it could go like a long time without nothing, all of a sudden you get like the same animal.
But this is where the movie starts, right? There's a serial killer of rabbits on the loose and only the taxidermist can like.
Yeah. But in other words, with pets, yeah, you have to like work a little, that's why I ask for pictures. Are the eyes open? Are the eyes a little slittier? Like a deer is a deer is a deer, you know? I can pretty much crank them out the same because the guy didn't see the deer like for a month and not got to know it, you know? He said, that's the end of it, you know? But with a pet, yeah, it's a little more involved. That's why pets cost more.
And you got to replace the eyes.
Yes,
right?
Glass eyes.
Yeah.
Companies
yeah.
make glass eyes for every animal. I can match any animal's eyes naturally.
So a pet costs more. If I come in with my cat, that's more expensive than the
yes.
equivalent fish.
If you bring me a cat this size and you bring me a raccoon this size, I'm charging you more for the cat. That's small. Because there's more work involved because it is a pet.
Because of the personality.
Because of, yeah, it's a little more work and it's, yeah. It's
and this grizzly wasn't a pet.
No. It's a pet now at somebody's house. They sent a cool Christmas card with the whole family around it with the kids sitting underneath it. Yeah, it was like, the thing was so big, they just found a place in the living room for us. It was a monstrous bear, man.
Wow.
Yeah,
like,
was,
if you are hunting and you shoot an animal,
right.
And then you taxidermist, and the person wants the skin clean, what happens, when you shoot it, what do you do with the bullet hole? Do you leave it, or do you, like, cover
what do you do with the what?
The bullet hole.
Good question.
Oh, okay. You can sew, like let's say you have an entry and an exit. Exit hole's always a little bigger. So, no, it is because it's like, because the bullet expands and it blows out the thing. So, it blows, makes a bigger hole. That should be one technical. Anyway, yeah, you sew it from the inside. And then if you have like a spot where the fur is missing, you can I have like stock where I can match the fur and glue fur in, or feathers, depending on whatever it is. Even deer have different like skin tone, like hair tone. It could be brown, 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 but there's light brown, medium brown. So I keep stock where I can repair anything. So the bullet hole would be sewn up and patched, and you wouldn't even know what the bullet hole. Yeah, go.
So once you retire, is this information going to be passed down? Someone, do you like have someone to go?
No, I don't. That's the thing. Yeah, I have no son, so no.
So do you think there's room in the New York market for more taxidermists?
If I ain't making a full-time living, I don't see it.
Really?
No, because in the boroughs, it's, I mean, I get, like I said, it's not a full-time job anymore. It's hunting is the biggest part of the business. Hunting, I'd say, was 80%. So if people ain't hunting, it's that's, you know, pets and other things fill in, but it's not.
So my cousins in Tennessee should stay where they are.
Stay where they are. If they stay busy down there, stay down there.
You got two over here.
Oh,
sorry.
Right.
And I've always been wondering, I think she has like a really interesting outlook on life because she does her best so much. And I'm curious, like, if you think your, I mean, it's so hard for you to judge, but like, you think your experience with taxidermy has been like, changed and influenced like how you look at, like, I don't know, pets in general, life in general. I mean,
no. And I give you a good example because animals come in, I don't know them. So there's no connection other than it's work. Anything personal to me, like my dog died a while ago, and I cried because he's my dog. He's my, I loved him. So there is a difference.
Did you mount him?
I can accept, huh?
Did you mount him?
No, I couldn't do it, man. It's too personal for me. It's not, you know. A trophy, yes. A pet, no. But other people want to keep their pets close to them. I did a parrot one time that this lady wanted to keep in a, I mounted it sleeping so she could put it in a coffin with her when she died. That's how much a parrot meant to her.
Wow. She's got a question.
I think actually smaller mammals, could you make your own form for them?
Yeah, I make anything like fox and small, I make an artificial body myself.
But what material do you use?
It's Excelsior, it's like a shredded wood.
Okay.
Like old couches used to be stuffed with it. It's really fine, and you can wrap it with string, and you can shape it up, and you can make any shape body you want.
Okay, and then, what do you think of rogue taxidermy and anthropomorphic taxidermy? And have you ever had someone bring you an exotic animal that they're not supposed to have and ask you to deal with it?
Okay, the third question first. A guy came in recently with a gray horned owl found in Cunningham Park. Federal bird you cannot have. Only way you can have it, if you could pay it, like let's say you found it, you get the paperwork from Conservation Department, DEC, whatever, I could mount it, but it has to be a teaching tool. It has to go to a school, Cub Scouts, something. You cannot find it and bring and have me do it and put it in your house. The reason is it protects the animals, like songbirds, seagulls, because they're all environmentally helpful, like all the predators, they kill rats, they kill mice. So everybody would kill them and say, oh, I found a bird. And this way it protects the animals by saying, you can't have it. Native Americans can have eagle feathers because it's part of their culture. But anybody else, any protected bird, you can have it done, but you have to donate it, and they will follow you to make sure you donate it. And the other questions I forgot.
Wait, what did you do with the owl?
Oh, I told him what he had to do. So he says, oh, I'll take it up to Canada and come back into the United States and say I got it in Canada. I said, well, then you'll be in federal jail because now you're taking a bird out of the country. He was determined to keep it. I told him, you cannot have this bird. But he's like, I found it. I said, you can have it. And he was determined to keep it. So I don't know whatever. He never came back, so maybe he's doing time now.
With his bird.
With his bird, yeah. The bird's somewhere, and he's there. So.
Rogue taxidermy and anthropomorphic taxidermy.
Rogue taxidermy?
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
Like wrapping one animal's head on another animal's body.
Oh, it's, well, that's...
Do you appreciate it? Do you see your...
It's art.
Okay.
You know, I don't see anything. You know, if you want to be creative and put, like I said, I put bird wings on a lizard because the guy wanted sort of like a fantasy thing, so I built it. So there's nothing wrong with that.
What was the pose for that?
Like, you could snap it like, no, I was walking, it was like a, it was, I think it was a tail or some kind of monitor, walking on a branch, but he wanted bird wings. Fantasy, I don't know. He wanted, I built it.
Awesome.
I ain't gonna argue.
We got time for two more, and then, okay, David and Rob.
Are there certain types of animals that are more challenging to taxidermy?
Okay, little animals, yes, because the smaller things are so tedious, it makes me crazy. And something very large, because sometimes you need another hand. Because if it's like bear, anything from a bear up, it's big bear, it's like a lot of work. So the smallest and the biggest, everything in the middle.
So like an average-sized fish would be more difficult than an average.
Yeah, no, anything, yeah. It's just the size of the thing. Little tedious things make me crazy because it's little legs and you really got to be.
You never got an insect, did you?
Yeah, people call me, they got whatever, and I say, just drop in a jar of alcohol and look at it, because I'm not going to get it. I'm going to dissect a praying mantis or a butterfly, you know, stick a pin in it and look at it.
Fair enough. We had, yeah.
Do you have a favorite piece of work that you've ever done?
Favorite. That's a good I mean, certain jaw just come out looking so... I think it's if the jaw comes out really good, when even I can say, shit, I really nailed this one. That's like the good jaw. But any animal, like if it's done right, and you look at it and figure, like sometimes it just comes out right. Everything goes good. If it's a bird, the feathers, everything lines up. You just say, it looks like it's... There's one cat in my shop, and it came out pretty good. The lady never came back for it, so it's like the mascot. Everybody comes in and goes, oh, I thought that cat was real. It looks, this is like the cat that looks so real, and that's probably, that's one of those things. It just came out looking, if everybody thinks it's real, that's as good as it gets.
All right, you had one, so.
You seem very objective by your work, and I love it, but have you ever, in all your years of work, ever had, like, a dream about one of your animals being stuffed?
No. They don't haunt me. People say, how do you live there? You got all these animals. Yeah. Does not bother me in the slightest. Nope. No.
Well, all right. So yeah, I mean, that's. I had another question, but I think that answer just kind of knocked it out. So I think we're good, but hang out because I'm sure people have more questions that we can ask you after or whatever.
All right. Well, so I'm here for a little while.
All right. Thanks a lot, John.
All right, thank you.
Cypress Hills Taxidermy Studio, if you guys have any, you know, anything you would like to preserve. And now on to the living animals. Awesome. Living animals?
Yes, living animals. I'm very happy about this transition.
So, yeah. Yes?
So should I sit here?
Oh, yes. Sorry. I do this all the time. So, the ingredients for this drink, just so you have this to think about. And if anyone wants another round.
It was a hobby. Punches were, we kind of call anything that we don't know or recognize and mix together now as punches. But punches were a very, very precise form of mixed drink that predated the cocktail. The thought actually is that punch comes from the Hindi word for five and was brought back to Great Britain and then created colonial United States by British colonialists. And punches were just that. They were not necessarily warm, but rarely cold. So this one is a combination of applejack, which is the house spirit of cabinet, allspice liqueur, ginger liqueur, pink peppercorn, and barrel-aged bitters.
Woohoo!
And I have one that's really passed the one out as
is there a naming competition?
Yes. Now you have the ingredients. You're going to get to taste it some more, so just... mull it over. Sorry, that blew, but it was original. And now here we have editor and critic Nikki Columbus discussing interspecies animal friendships. Stuff these kind of things?
Huh?
Do you ever get asked to stuff these kind of, like these arrangements, like double animals?
Yes, and monkeys, yes. Double monkeys.
But together?
Oh, together?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
I've done animals with other animals in their mouth, like a pheasant, but not, they're not getting...
But not tenderly. All right.
Right, yeah, we'll get to that.
Okay.
So, anyway, I'm here talking about my obsession, which is... animals. I love animals. I don't see them that often in the flesh, as it were. So I love to look at photos of animals. I mean, look at that. Hi. Hey, everybody. Look at the parakeet on a chihuahua. Yes, thank you. Anyway, obviously, I'm not the only one with this obsession. Cute animal. Cute animal photos are a multi-million dollar... I should talk into the mic, shouldn't I?
Yeah, sure.
I don't think it's long. Cute animal photos are a multi-million dollar industry, and the website Cute Overload, for example,
Mike's not on.
More than 30,000 hits per day.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Hello?
Here, why don't you take mine?
What? No, it's okay. Everybody's quiet.
Okay.
Anyway, but while some people like, for example, let's say photos of kittens, or videos of hedgehogs taking baths, or a lot of people like pictures of baby animals, the category I find particularly affecting is interspecies friendships. Now, humans often obviously form close relationships with animals, but it's less common. But it's, you know.
This is going to be the best Christmas ever.
But so humans often form close relationships with animals, but there's generally humans. Can we turn this on?
I think. Yeah, you may as well take mine.
Let me take your mic. Can we hold the slides for a second? Yeah, thank you. Yeah, look, that's pretty precious. Okay, so anyway, there, that's a little bit better. So humans often form relationships with animals, of course, but we're always the owner, you know? But when two animals meet, they're more often on equal footing. This is what makes it different, I think. Now, I should mention that some animal behaviorists hesitate to call these relationships friendships. Seeing that as, you know, a human term that we can't really apply to animals. But animals do have emotions, and so I'm not saying the walrus is calling the dolphin up on the phone and like chatting or like having gossip once a week. I'm using the term friendship in a more general way. So anyway. But what is it exactly about these? So this is the last one. Let's stay here. No, sorry. Go back. Back? Yeah. What is it exactly about these pictures and stories that moves me so much? I'm not really sure. So to investigate, I've put together a taxonomy of interspecies friendships. And we can hold here for a second. So there are five categories. Now, obviously, what was most striking about a lot of those pictures was just how different the two animals appear. This makes the relationship seem all the more funny and strange, and then also more adorable and touching. So here we have a video. Next. So this is a pit bull named Sharky, and these are some chicks. Now, you might think this pit bull is actually a male pit bull, so this is not a, you know, instinctual motherly instincts that you're seeing. Think whatever. And we can watch the next video. Can we see the next one? Yeah. Sorry, it's a little complicated, PowerPoint. Yes, hi. Hi, everybody. Okay, maybe we might just have to watch the whole video. Okay, sorry, so here's the next one here. Yeah. Now, there might be some of you who are wondering, okay, how long is this relationship really going to last? You know, at what point does the pit bull just start chomping on these chicks? Well, if we can move on to the next video. I'd like to show all you skeptics. Yes, this is 1 year later. And everyone's still friends. So, okay. So now we can go to the next slide. So some of you might have heard this story. This is Owen and Mazie. Owen is a baby hippo and Mazie is a 130-year-old tortoise. Now, Owen was orphaned during floods in 2004, and he was rescued, he was saved, the rest of his family perished, and he was brought to a wildlife sanctuary, and he was terrified and frightened, and as soon as he was released, he ran over to this 130-year-old tortoise, Mazie, and cowered behind him, as if the tortoise were his mother. The next slide. The two became inseparable. Owen was often seen following Mazie, and they would eat together, and next slide. Sleep together, and next slide. Yeah, and we could see they were very affectionate. This is actually affection, don't be nervous. And if we stay on this slide, you can see that while a hippo and a tortoise actually seem very different from each other, there are similarities. There's a sort of a similar color and a similar size. And so people speculated that perhaps this is what attracted Owen to Mazzi and why he turned to Mazzi as a mother figure. And in fact, we often see this, that animals might be attracted, an animal might be attracted to an animal of another species that actually is, has a similar morphology. So next. So here we have a bunny and a hedgehog, but a similar brindled color. And next. Yeah. So now in the next slide, you can see we have sort of the counterpoint. This is a gorilla and a kitten, which are obviously very different animals. Some of you might have heard of Coco, who's a gorilla who was taught sign language. She understands and uses more than 1,000 signs. And she was big in the 80s. Here we can look at the next next slide, Mimi. And so and at that point, you know, as a child, I had a book called Coco's Kitten. And it told about her, how she requested to have a pet cat. Yes, so we can leave this one. So you can see there are a few different cats here. But originally, for her very first kitten, they showed her an array of kittens. And she chose a baby Manx cat. A Manx is a tailless cat. And she named the kitten All Ball, which is a very adorable name. But it also shows Coco's, you know, understanding of human language and concepts. So I even remember that at one point the story mentioned that the kitten bit her, and she succinctly signed obnoxious. Now, unfortunately, a few years ago, Coco was involved with a sexual harassment lawsuit when two women who worked for the zoo where she lives claimed that they were fired because they refused to reveal their breasts to Coco, who it seems has not only a kitten fetish, but also a nipple fetish. But we'll have the next slide. This is another subset in which a member of one species basically hitches a ride on another. So yeah, here we have a bunch of monkeys on a capybara, which is the largest rodent in the world, by the way. Now these transportation arrangements sometimes make sense. We can move on. And the next one. So you know, if you're tired, why not hitch a ride on a fish? This snail is obviously moving a lot faster on the frog as it would, than it would otherwise. This seems a little misguided. Now, this next image, I'd like to just hold on this for a moment. Because this, I don't know if you feel the same way, David, but this looks like a parable to me. Like the monkey that crosses a body of water on the back of a toad. I don't know what the moral of this story is, but you know, if anyone knows the parable that this photo illustrates, please, you know, let me know.
I think what comes next is a scorpion on the back of a toad.
Well, it's like that. But this, the mouse isn't going to hurt the toad.
No,
no, it's a beautiful friendship.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So now here, no, sorry, we can go to the next. Yeah, it isn't a good photo, though, yeah. So here, predator and prey, this is a very important category, really the ne plus ultra of interspecies friendships. Here, an animal that you would usually eat another animal instead chooses to befriend it. We can go to this video. Now here we have a true inversion of the natural order, as this cat is clearly owned by these rats. Now instead of biting the rat's head off, which it can easily do, the cat just looks slightly irritated by all the attention. Also, notice the folksy soundtrack, which is a staple of a lot of these animal videos. It's as if to say, look, this is totally natural, this is every day, a cat and a rat can be friends. And here the cat finally buckles, it's not running away. Instead, you know, it's here, we get, you know, yeah, she gives a little lick to the rat, a little affection. So here, if we can move to the, yeah. It, also, you see in a lot of these videos, the cat looked a little embarrassed as it was caught on camera. Yeah. So if we can move to the next, oh yeah, great. So this is Ao-chan, a snake who lives in a zoo in Japan. He's big in Japan. He refused to eat, and so his keepers got him what they thought was a special, delicious treat, a live dwarf hamster. Who was then bluntly named Gohan-chan, or meal. As you can see, however, the snake showed absolutely no interest in eating the hamster. And so instead, they now actually happily cohabitate in a cage together. Now, this is the money shot, which is basically, you know, the apex of cuteness in the video, which is the hamster just sort of nestling into the coils of the snake. Yeah. Yeah. Hi. Okay, and now this is Hannah-chan, the cat, who obviously does not have such friendly feelings toward the hamster. Yeah, she just sort of sits outside and stalks. Okay. So, we can watch the last of this. There's a little cute moment at the end. Yeah, there we go. Wash your face. Yeah. Okay. Okay, and then the next, yeah. Next. Yeah. So a few years ago in the Samburu National Reserve of Kenya, a lone lioness separated from her pride was observed with a baby oryx, which is a kind of antelope that lions eat. So park keepers expected, okay, she's playing with her food. But instead, she took care of the baby oryx as if it were her own. And this went on for a few weeks, but unfortunately, the lioness was unable to feed the oryx, and she couldn't feed herself as she was too afraid to hunt because she was afraid that other predators would attack the baby oryx. Park wardens actually left some meat for the cat, but she wouldn't eat it, as if her natural meat-eating instincts had disappeared. So the two slowly starved together. Then one day, as the oryx strayed too far or the lioness fell asleep, a lion killed and ate the baby oryx. And the lioness mourned. She walked all over where the oryx had been. She could smell its blood. But she went on the next day. She went back to being a predator and killed and ate an impala. Yes. After this, however, Yeah, no, she was very well. No, but I mean, it's interesting. Even after this, though, she went on to adopt several more baby oryxes. And the locals who worked in the park saw this as a message from God, and they named the lioness Kamunyak, which means blessed one. And really, it's true. I think this is why this is so moving, this sort of category, predator and prey, is because, you know, it sort of really reflects on our own inability as humans to get along even with members of our own species. And this really seems an example of love and tolerance that, you know, that is in fact possible. And I just, you know, if you give me, you know, 1 second, I just like to quote from President Obama, who spoke on Tuesday night, and he said in a slightly different context, "At a time when too many of our institutions have let us down, they exceed all expectations. They don't obsess over their differences, they work together. Imagine what we could accomplish if we followed their example." Okay, next. Now, things might have ended differently for Kamunyak and the baby oryx if she'd been able to suckle it. And indeed, there are quite a few stories of baby animals who are rejected by their mothers or otherwise orphaned, who then are suckled by mothers of another species. We can go to the next, if you can see this video. Next. Next. Next.
We need
another slide. Oh, yeah, sorry. So anyway, here we see a cat in South Africa, a country that suffered so much under apartheid. And she is nursing not only her own kittens, but also a litter of orphaned baby squirrels. Yeah. And again, we have the folksy soundtrack. I mean, look, their eyes are closed, they can barely move. I wish I were that person holding that baby squirrel. And here you see the kitten even playing with the baby squirrel. Yeah. Okay. So if we can move on to the next one. Oh. Yeah. No, this is a fawn suckling from a boxer. Quite vigorously suckling. And in fact, you know, we can move on here. This is a dog suckling baby red pandas. The next one. Now this is a dog with her own litter of pups and a little kitten. The next one. Now here, actually, you know, you're seeing again a dog with some cats. These are lion cubs. But, you know, and it is, it does, there are quite a few stories of big cats who reject their young, and dogs are often turned to as surrogate mothers or, you know, wet nurses, really. So you see, yeah, here's a dog with a tiger. And this is a golden retriever with some white tiger cubs, which is an endangered species. I don't know if they're entirely albino because they have the black. So, yeah, anyway. So this is more rare, I would say, to have a pig suckling tigers. But there is, you'll see there's a lot of nipple action, which I think Coco the gorilla would like. We have the next one, yeah. And then the next one, which here we have, this is the opposite case. So here, this is a tiger mom. And when I say tiger mom, I don't mean this in the Asian American sense. But and so she gave birth to a litter prematurely. And her babies died. And she was in mourning, depressed, refusing to eat. And so the zookeepers decided that they had to find her some other babies to nurse. And they went around to other zoos, and they looked for tigers, lions, whatever, any kind of cat. And, well, the best they could come up with was a litter of baby piglets. And now my girlfriend, who has zero tolerance for pictures of cute animals, really likes the story because of the fashion aspect. And here we can see there are a few more pictures. Here, there's the fake jungle backdrop here. And here, in the next slide, we see more pictures. Yeah. But then in the next picture, you can see here that even when they don't have their tiger suits on, she's perfectly happy taking care of them as if they were her own babies. And even, as you can see, yeah, even as they grow up. Yeah. Now, here, this next video, you can see, I could be wrong, but this looks to me like an adult cat suckling from a dog, which is, you know, maybe a little perverse. Now, I think this doubly unnatural, yet not natural act underlines the undeniable kink to be found in some of these interspecies relationships. Which brings us to our final category. So, it might just be me, but some of these images seem to show relationships that move beyond friendship into something maybe sexual. Move the next one. I mean, is this pig canoodling with the cat? Here, this is like, you know, this is like the drunken, lecherous lug who insists on giving you a hug. Yeah. Okay, so we can stay here for a second. So this is actually a picture of a dog and a donkey, as you can see. And this is because this illustrates a story that a good friend of mine told me about a dog in a small town, a small village in France. The dog had only three legs and was thus named Trio. And he befriended this donkey who's named Baptiste, which my French friend tells me is a common name for donkeys in France. So every day the dog would go and visit the donkey, and Baptiste would lower his head, and Trio would lean in and lick Baptiste's ear, and just lick it and really just get in there, give it a good cleaning. And Baptiste would lower his head and get lower and lower and lower. And what the people of the village could see was that, you know, the donkey would get more and more, shall we say, excited as this went on. So I like to call this the story of the three-legged dog and the five-legged donkey. Thank you. Yeah. Okay, so we can, yeah, there we go. And next. Okay. Yeah, oh, sorry. So, now, you notice here this video has the folksy soundtrack again, but I'm not really sure how family-friendly this video is. Because this really looks like an erotic massage to me. And in fact, we have some porn site that you can visit, see? Yeah. Anyway, yeah. And again, you see the embarrassed look on the dog, yeah. Now, we're gonna hold for we can go to the next video. And before you press play, I just wanna say that this video has a very different soundtrack, and I think it's really a more honest reflection of its content. So if you could press play. Ha ha ha!
enough. We could stop it and move on. Yeah. or not, you know. Okay, so now I leave you with a final video. Yeah, so this is the final video I'm going to show you. And as you watch it, I just like to leave you with this question. If a dog can fuck a kitten, why can't we get along with the Muslims?
Nikki Columbus, everyone. Okay, so has everyone had their drinks? Has everyone tried their drinks? Has everyone been thinking a little bit? This is the first call for names. We'll be keeping track. Anyone? Thoughts?
What should this? Apple crack.
The apple crack.
Apple crack. Okay.
Apple crack.
The Yule Brenner.
The Yule Brenner. All right. You guys keeping track of this? Yeah. Someone? All right. Apple crack. Yule Brenner. Anything else?
Why is it Yule Brenner?
Yule. Y-U-L-E. Oh. Because it's baldly delicious. Anyone else? All right, think about it some more, because we need at least three to really have it be... All right. Yeah. Are there any more? Are we done? Are we out?
We're almost out.
We're almost out. All right, then I'm going to have a tiny bit. Maybe I'll come up with something really great. Alright, so and our last guest after this fantastic vision of the peaceable kingdom by Cheetah Printed, Nikki Columbus? Yeah. Would be the spirit of Christmas himself. Our next guest has been Santa Claus at Macy's. He has been Santa Claus, I think, on this year's NBC CBS for the Super Bowl. He has appeared in various venues. He now is proprietor of Santa's Barbecue. Please welcome Santa Frank Pesquizzi.
To the taxidermy guy? Mrs. Claus long said that she refuses to get rid of me after I go, and she does have this whole room set up. Where,
is it a full mount or just your head on the wall?
It'll be me in the suit, you know, and I'll be like. So I'm gonna need your card.
He's a really law-abiding taxidermist, though.
No, I could tell from the owl thing.
Okay.
Right. And I need to give. Could you give this to the?
Oh, absolutely.
The animal.
Speaking of it, it's Fiji fresh.
That's actually me kissing Rudolph goodnight. Don't get any ideas.
Is Mrs. Claus really a Mrs. Claus? Does she play Santa also? Or I mean, does she play Mrs. Claus? No, I mean,
she stays in the background. She'll wrap presents. You know, she'll cook for the elves. She definitely cooks for me.
Okay, so you're.
She refuses to don the the Mrs. Claus dress and actually come out with me.
Okay.
But
just to get ground rules, just to figure out whether I'm getting Miracle on 34th Street or not. Like, uh-huh. Are you Santa or are you coming in as a guy who plays Santa?
Oh no, this is it's me.
Oh, it's you.
I mean,
okay.
Who else has a picture of Rudolph?
is that a trick question?
It could be.
Okay, so how did you get started?
Oh, how did I get started? It started probably when I was about 2 years old. I had the cutest little Santa Claus doll you've ever wanted. I mean, it was my life. I loved it. But Mom saw it as an evil thing because I sucked my thumb. And when I sucked my thumb, I rubbed the Santa Claus doll on my lip. So she figured if she threw the Santa Claus doll away, that I would stop sucking my thumb. So I retrieved the Santa Claus doll out of the garbage at least 10 times. It became only a head after a while. Finally, I gave up. She threw it out. It was gone. 2 years ago, Mom calls me up and goes, "Guess what I found?" And I said, "What? I have no idea. I found the Santa Claus doll." and I threw it out. Thanks, Mom.
Wow.
So, you know, my mother started me on the road to being Santa Claus, where there was one year where she took all my junk out of one of my drawers, wrapped it up, and gave it to me for Christmas. And the moral of the story was, well, if you didn't miss it, you didn't need it, clean your room. Merry Christmas.
Wow. So your mother was Scrooge, more or less.
Pretty much, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And when did you what was your apprenticeship like? When did you first play Santa?
Well, my third child, whose middle name is Yule, because he was born on Christmas Day, we decided when he got a little older, we went to Macy's. And at that time, I had a little bit longer beard, and I bleached it. And they offered me a job.
You just walked in the afternoon?
Just walked in. They saw the way I was acting to other kids in the room. And I had an interview that lasted 3 hours. The interviewer was crying. He fired the weekend Santa Claus. I even have the tape recording of him calling me back and saying, it didn't really work out with the other guy. We really want you, blah, 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 blah. So I was a weekend Santa Claus at Macy's for 5 years.
This is whenabouts?
98, 99.
And what had your job been? What was your week job?
My week job was I was a fire sprinkler engineer, which if you see that pipe that runs, see the pipes up there with the little brass thing sticking out of them? Well, that puts out the fire if there is one. So I designed those for 32 years.
And are you still doing that, or are you a full-time Santa?
No, the economy hit, and they decided to replace me with somebody who made $50,000 less than me. So as of last March, I was unemployed, which gave me time to cook. I've been a barbecue chef for 10 years, so now I'm actually selling it now, which makes me very, very happy.
So you got to bring together both of the sidelines that you
had,
like in Santa.
Both of my hobbies have now become my full-time job.
So you were a weekend Santa from 97 to
96, 98, something. I don't even remember the years. I was there when the towers went down. I was asked by children for their parents to come back. There were a lot of intense things that people ask for. The best thing I could tell a little child, when they're looking at you and they're crying, and they say, I just want mommy back, or I just want daddy back. Luckily, I had psychological training years before, and I said to them, well, there's certain things that Santa Claus can't do, but what I can do is I can make sure that they visit you every night that you dream, as long as you want to meet with them. And it works. It works really well. I know adults that still, to this day, take that advice, come back to me and say, I had a dream about Grandma last night. Thank you.
Wow.
When you say the psychological training, was that
I ordered it classes for psychiatry.
Before or after you started being a Santa?
Before Santa.
Before Santa.
Yes.
So that's an interesting.
I've done a lot of strange things.
what kind of training does Macy's put you through before you hit the floor?
Sexual harassment, cash register use. A lot of things that you aren't going to use. seriously, they make you take the sexual harassment class, and you look at them and you go, look, I'm going to get little kids on my lap and talk to them about giving them gifts. And you, come on, I shouldn't be taking this class.
But is it like one of these, but is it like one of these driver's ed things where they're like, the proper response in a red light is A,
well,
stop, B,
Macy's,
gun it.
Macy's
like,
has a manual of stand pat answers.
Right.
But that's really good, but unfortunately there's a million questions out there that people ask without there being anything in the book.
But so what was a don't in terms of kids sitting on
your
lap?
Don't ever get out of the chair, because there's 32 Santa Clauses at Macy's, and there's 6 different houses, and I didn't tell you that. So everybody has to look the same. Right. So if you stand up, they might notice the different size. You can't talk loud. never, ever, ever, if a kid comes up to you to give you a kiss, never, ever kiss the kid on the lips. I do know the Santa Claus that was fired because the parents said, go kiss Santa Claus goodnight. And the kid went up to him, kissed him on the lips. A half an hour later, the store let Santa go out. Always turn, let the kid kiss your cheek. Make sure that the parents can see you. Always have your hands visible. always. I knew a Santa Claus. The guy was 80 years old. And doing this all day long gets tiring. He had his hands down. People came back with the picture, with investigators, all kinds of things. They found him to be, you know, honest. They found him not to have done what they said he did, because there was just too many people around. But people are crazy.
Wow.
I have to have insurance now. I have to have liability insurance. I have to have a background check, which is a good thing, because frankly, I want you to know who you're going to let your child sit on. You know? Boy, did that come out weird. Who's laughing your child?
But there's no union for this, right? I mean, you guys have
there's no union, no. But there are groups.
There's the Fraternal Order of Real Bearded.
Order of Real Bearded Santa Claus, the Amalgamated Order of Real Bearded Santas, the Fraternal Order of Real Bearded Santas, you know, Peach Tree Santas, you name it. There's groups for, you know, although I'm going to try and start the New York one.
The New York.
Are there inter-Santa rivalries?
There are, and they get ugly. You know, you got to understand that Santa Claus, there's really only one. So all of these other guys are just humans, and they get jealous of each other, and they argue with each other, and there's greed involved. So there's like takeovers and
takeovers.
Oh, it gets messy.
Of what? Like you come in, someone else is in your chair?
No. You know, the elves make sure that that doesn't happen. But there was this one large Santa Claus group, the Amalgamated Order of Real Bearded Santas.
Oh, this thing, yeah.
And they voted this guy to be president. Now, this guy had his own company before he was president. His company was, he was an agent for Santa Clauses. Now, all of a sudden, he becomes president, and he has 2,500 Santa Clauses addresses. So, of course, he uses them, and now he's a national booking agent. Well, everybody got angry. You can't do it. But you put me into this position. What was I going to do? He shouldn't have used the names. Whatever. They fired him. Somebody else took over. There's an FBI investigation. It's ridiculous.
Do you like working malls better? I mean, what's your favorite way to? I mean, because you guys can go to Frank's website and you can see him do this awesome Super Bowl spot. But like when you're working in public, like street santing, mall santing, department store santing.
Mall santering, I've never actually done it. You know, the closest thing I've done to a mall Santa is the Macy's thing.
Right.
And 45 seconds a visit, and that's it. They want them in. Throw at them everything that you need to throw at them, and then get them out and make them buy the picture. I quit because that's not Santa Claus. That's big business. That's, we make money by selling pictures. You look good. Here we go. So I made my own suit, which you've seen. It's a full-length, old-style European coat. It's got white fur. Please don't get mad. It has real fur. But, you know, if I'm living in the Arctic, that's where I would have fur. It's just a natural thing. And I didn't kill the animals, I just shaved them. So the animals willingly gave up their coats for me.
So you went solo.
Like. Went solo. I had to advertise for like 5 years. And then it was just word of mouth. I got one guy who wants to hire me Christmas Eve for the next 10 years.
For parties or for
his Christmas Eve party for his kids. He said, you know, I've been trying to get you for the last 2 years, and you've been too busy. I'm calling you now for 2012. This was last year, and the next 10 years after that.
Wow.
So I'm like, and then he goes, can I send you a check?
So his kids are going to be like 30 by the time they're done.
And, you know, unfortunately, he lives out in Medford, and on Christmas Eve, I do like 15 visits. So Medford is just a tad too far.
Oh, wow.
So I'm really thinking about telling him I can't.
So you just sat in a Santa outfit driving from...
I put 250 miles on my truck this Christmas Eve.
Wow, and then
I visited 15 families and 4 families that were underprivileged, that I take some of the money that I make throughout the season, and I get their lists from the school counselor. She gets all of their lists. She finds the families. She gets the lists of everything that they want. She gives me the list via email. I give the list to my wife. I give the cash to my wife. She goes shopping. That's as far as she's Mrs. Claus. She goes shopping.
She'll, like I said, wrap the presents. So all I got to do on Christmas Eve morning is throw those bags into the car, into the truck, sledge, and go to the underprivileged houses, give them their presents, and then I do the paying customers.
And how do you spend Christmas Day?
Christmas Day,
exhausted.
I would like to sleep, but I usually don't get a chance to because the kids wake me up, because they want to, you know, they want to open up their gifts, have breakfast after we open up the gifts, and then, you know, it's just like everybody hangs around, everybody's quiet. People started asking me if I would come visit them Christmas morning. I said, I'll do it after 11 o'clock, which is fine. I go to the house. I apologize. I'm really, really sorry. I got back to the North Pole, and your gift was sitting there on the floor. The elves must have messed up. I really, really apologize.
So you
but
blame,
I knew it was important, so
elf.
I brought it back to you. What?
You blame the elf?
Oh, always. Okay. Always. It's never mind. I'm just a delivery guy. That's it.
Do your kids believe in Santa Claus?
They do believe in Santa Claus. There's a couple of stories which not only makes me believe in the real Santa Claus, but them. When my youngest daughter, she's now 13, a couple of years ago, Christmas Eve, she was like, Dad, when are you going to get the reindeer?
Oh.
And I really had to look at her and go, look, if I was really Santa Claus, would we live on Long Island? And she gave me the, isn't this like just, you know, a summer home? Or, you
know? When are we going to the Arctic, Daddy?
Yeah. I do have a sleigh. You know, so she's waiting, but she's 13 now, and they all understand. I mean, I would go to my son's football games, and the whole team would be like, and my son would go, yep, that's my dad.
Is there a Santa Claus in film or literature that you use as your principal influence in how you do your character?
I really, really like Miracle on 34th Street, the original. Mm. He's a quiet, gentle man, and believe it or not, I became quiet and gentle when I did Macy's because I was nervous at the time of saying the wrong thing and having the parents like get mad at me. So I would talk really quiet to the kids, and all of a sudden it became, wow, he's really good and gentle. So I was like, okay, this works out great. Now everybody like tries to emulate me, which is perfect.
Did you have a mentor, or was it the guy in Miracle on 34th Street?
It was the guy in Miracle on 34th Street.
Do parents ever freak out on you?
Parents freak out all the time. You'll have, like I did Newsday's Holiday Lights, where you would walk through this whole maze of lights, and then at the end of the maze, there was my house. And well, you got, you know, you could definitely tell that certain ethnic groups are insane. I'm Italian, so I can say this. The Italian fathers, they're lunatics. It's Santa! It's Santa! Give me an ass! You know, and they freak out. And then you look over at the kid's like, the kid's shaking. Well, why is the kid shaking? Because you're an idiot. That's so I have to go, Dad, shh. Let me talk to the kid. Let me talk. What's his name? And I talk to him from me to you. Okay, because the kid's terrified. And I just want to know what you want for Christmas. That's all I want to know. You don't have to come over. We don't have to take nothing. I just want to know what you want for Christmas. And then they tell me. And said, could you do me a little favor? Could you come a little closer? Maybe stand over here. We'll take a picture together. After about 2 or 3 minutes, the kid's on my lap. The parents are like this. How the hell did you do that? He's terrified of you. No. Well, he's terrified of me because you said he's scared of you. So the kid is smart enough to know the word scared. The kid says, that's what I am, I'm scared. No, the kid is nervous because you've taught him not to be friends with strangers. So the minute you walk in and say, Santa, he's going to be scared, the kid picks up on it and the kid is scared.
Well, actually that, okay, so you did Gaga's Funhouse at Barney's,
yes,
right?
Yes,
so, which is a pretty scary place. Like my girlfriend and I walked by there. You walked through there. You weren't there that day. What did you think of doing that?
Like, almost any exposure was good exposure.
All right.
But seriously, there's really nothing wrong with anything she has there. They're gifts that the elves just don't make. I mean, finger on a stick. You know, my elves aren't going to make that. You know what I'm saying?
Union regulation?
No, it's not a union regulation. It's just that they're just into happy and, you know, and they figure on stick just isn't their thing.
But the commercial, is, I mean, I guess if you're a department store saying it's commercial anyway, but like the guy, so the Gaga element didn't bother you.
No, not at all. You got to understand that Santa Claus loves everybody. I don't care who you are. You're a human being, okay? And that means I love you.
Is there another Santa who you really didn't like?
That I really didn't like?
Yeah, was there any like a rival or anyone you crossed paths with where you were like, oh.
Well, actually, the Santa Claus who got voted in as president of the Amalgamated Order of Real Bearded Santa Clauses, because he is an agent.
Right.
He cut a deal this year with Sears and Walmart and a couple of companies to have Santa Clauses from across the entire United States to pose for a day for pictures, which sounds great, but they were getting $25 and $30 an hour. Now, people might think that's a lot of money. I get $300 an hour and $300 a half an hour on Christmas Eve. So when you get a bunch of these Santa Clauses that look at, well, you know, the economy sucks, and this guy's offering me $30 an hour. Well, now, what he's done is he's taken 10% of everybody across the United States. He has that money. He's making a lot of money. These Santa Claus is making $30 an hour, and now nobody can approach these stores anymore because they've already paid $30 an hour.
What do you mean nobody can approach the stores? Like,
the guy who sat there this year isn't going to go say, well, you know, I could do it without having to pay him the, you know, the fee.
Right.
It's not going to happen anymore.
Right.
So he's actually taking advantage of other Santa Clauses. That's what I don't like. As a person, I had him in my house. He was in my living room. He's talking like a normal person. My daughter, who was 8 at the time, comes walking down the stairs. All of a sudden, he goes, and hello, how are you? In his deep Santa Claus voice. And she looked at him and goes, what? Because she saw the transition. If you're not going to be you, who's going to believe you?
So you don't go in for this ho, ho, ho kind of...
Ho, ho, ho is a laugh. It's only when it's only when something's funny. I know Santa Clauses that just, you know, in the middle of a sentence they'll go, ho, ho, ho. There's no reason for that. I mean, you know when you're texting and you do LOL?
Yeah.
Stop it. Are you really laughing out loud? Really? Come on.
Do Santas do HOH or like?
No. Typing ho 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 is very dangerous. People can take it the wrong way.
True enough.
So you got to be careful what you do.
What's the most annoying question you get when somebody's when you tell my job?
It's actually not the most annoying question. It's the most annoying statement. Can I give you that one?
That's fine.
Aren't you early? Today, aren't you late? My stamp pad answer is, well, judging by your smile, I'm right on time.
Oh.
Once I snapped. Once.
While wearing the suit?
While in the suit.
All right.
I was walking towards the subway, and this guy, I feel so bad. But this guy looked at me and goes, aren't you early? And I went, you know, I promised myself the next person who said that I was going to kill. And he was just like,
right.
I'm sorry.
And that's the moment when they send you to Bellevue. And
yes.
I have one last question, and then we should open it out, which is on that note. When you guys walk by the Salvation Army Santas on the street, like say you're out of costume, mm-hmm. and you're just like, I mean, are you guys like? Amateurs, or do you feel bad for them because they just have to stand there and they're not really trained for it? Or are they like?
They are collecting money for the poor.
Right.
They are not getting paid. These guys are volunteers, and 9 times out of 10, they're overheated in those suits, and they stand there for hours. So please, if you see them, give them some change.
One more question. What would you fight for? Let's say there was a viable Santa's union, like, you know, negotiating with department stores. What would be the one thing that you were like, this has to change?
standardized salaries.
They're negotiated individual.
Yeah. Like, there are a couple of Santa Clauses on Long Island, and, you know, my prices are set. The people who hire me know that I'm more expensive than other Santa Clauses, but they hire me because they've hired the other Santa Clauses already, and they don't want to have anything to do with it anymore. I mean, one guy showed up with galoshes. You don't walk into somebody's house with them little snap-on things and say that those are Santa Claus boots.
No, you don't.
You just, you know.
Questions?
Oh, I got a question.
I don't want to hear anything like, where's the pony? Or how come I didn't get that doll?
Your beard is real, right?
What?
Your beard is real.
Yes, it is.
Now, for the Macy's Santas, do the beards always have to be a real beard?
I think starting 2 years ago, they allowed one Santa Claus, who's been there for 20 years, to have his own beard. And then they actually went and bought other beards to glue on to the other Santas to look like his.
Because some beards are so phony. Like, your beard is real, so like, yeah. It's believable.
I mean, if you look at the old Santa Claus pictures from Macy's, they're hideous.
Yeah,
if you look on my Facebook page, you'll see me sitting next to a Macy's
right.
Santa Claus, and it's like, oh my God.
Man, I got a couple of friends that pull beards, like, and I know a real beard when I see one, so I figured maybe they want Santa to be as believable as possible.
You know my hair's not white, though.
Yeah.
My hair is jet black. I put my daughter through cosmetology school, and she bleaches it for me.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. My hair is jet black.
Wow. Whoa.
You go Santa year-round?
Yes. Well, if I'm not going to do something, I'll let the roots grow out. Like, 2 days ago, my roots were about a half an inch. So, you know, it looks a little weird. There's the black and then there's the white. Some model stopped me on the street and she goes, is that natural? It looks great. How do you do that? And I looked at her and you could tell that she bleaches, so why didn't she know?
I don't know. Other than the dye, you have a beard care regimen? Anything you have to do to...
I'm a guy, no. You know, I brush it. I wash it whenever, and that's it. I'm supposed to take, like, special vitamins, you know, for my hair. I don't do that. You know.
So in the summer, you can be, like, Chris Angel, and then, like,
yeah,
in the winter, you can be
Santa. Like, you know, on my Facebook page, you'll see pictures of, like, 6-inch roots with the white at the bottom.
That sounds scary.
Yeah.
Mommy!
It gets a little crazy.
Any questions?
I imagine that you must have astounding health insurance because of all the snotty noses and all the kids you talk to. I feel like this is like hazard work, like being a nurse or a doctor. Do you qualify for that standard of health insurance?
We don't, Santas don't have a specific insurance. It's not it's not a group, but my wife, thank God, has the full-time job with Verizon. So she has great health care. Out of the 15 years that I've been doing this, I've gotten sick maybe twice throughout the year. This year was the worst. This year, I had 15 visits for Christmas Eve. After the third visit, I couldn't talk. I actually had to have the host of the house read 'Twas the Night Before Christmas and call out the names on the gifts that I was giving out because I sounded like this. And everybody was worried. Christmas morning, I woke up and was rushed to the hospital. I'm a diabetic. My blood sugar was down to 30. So sometimes, because I'm a guy, I don't take care of myself. I don't eat right, you know.
All those sweets.
Well, I stopped eating all the sweets, but, you know, on Christmas Eve, they want to take a picture of you eating that cookie. Oh. And what am I supposed to say? I'm sorry, Santa doesn't eat cookies anymore. Can't happen. So I eat two or three at each house.
Right.
Then they gave me a plate of them to take in a truck with me. Slow.
And you've got all that distance to travel. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Anyone else?
Nick. How do you feel about SantaCon, and do you take part?
I always want to take part in SantaCon, but they announced the day that it's going to be way too late. I'm already booked for every weekend in 2012. I'm going to miss it. If I want to go, I have to give up like $1,700. And most of my money is cash. So
What do they book you as over the summer? I mean, when they book Santa over the summer, what do they want?
Well, they're not booking me over the summer. They're booking me now for every weekend in Christmas.
Right.
Or, you know, the weeknights or the weekdays, daycare centers. You know, they want to make sure that they get me because they call me in November and December, and I'm like, look, you can't do this.
Right.
I had Lindenhurst Fire Department call me a month ago because they've tried to get me for 3 years. And I will not charge Lindenhurst Fire Department, you know, $300 for an hour. I charge as, you know, if it's a fire department, it's $100 an hour. If it's a hospital, it's free. If it's anything that has to do with the elderly or sick children, it's free. I did New York University Cancer Hospital. That was free. One woman called me up and said, look, my grandmother's dying of cancer. Okay, fine, I'll be there. I'm not gonna charge you a dime. Went there, her son emails me the next day. This is why I'm Santa Claus. He emails me the next day and he says, I never have nor never will receive a better Christmas gift than the day you showed up and you turned my 80-year-old grandmother, my 80-year-old mother, who's dying of cancer, into a 6-year-old girl. And then when I went to the funeral, because they invited me to the funeral, there was a picture of me and Rudolph in the casket and the little bell that I gave
for
Rudolph. And I'm looking, you know, there is my stuff in the casket, and I just made an entire family who went through something horrible. I made them all happy. When I walked into the funeral, they all came up and hugged me. That's why I'm Santa Claus. I'm Santa Claus to turn every adult, to remind you what it was like to be a little kid, and to take every little kid and try and extend it a little bit longer.
That's very nice.
That's my job.
Santa Frank Pascuzzi. I have one more question. Sorry, but I didn't mean to. So how does the Santa and the barbecuing go together?
Well, like I said, I've been a barbecue chef for years.
Okay.
I've been, there's a group called Kansas City Barbecue Association Society, and I'm a qualified, certified barbecue judge. So I've been judging and cooking for 10 years. I have pro teams asking me my opinion on their food. Today I got two phone calls, one from a barbecue team that wants to buy a deli. Do I want to buy in with them so I can help them cook? And another one called the Grill Scouts, which started out as the Girl Scouts doing a barbecue competition. They want me to cook with them professionally as well. So I'm not making much money doing the barbecue yet, but like when I started the Santa Claus thing, I advertised for 5 years.
Right.
And then it was word of mouth.
Right.
So I expect the same thing with the barbecue stuff.
Right.
And I'm still working out the FedEx thing where I can overnight you frozen food. But everybody who's tasted my the ribs, the chicken, the brisket, the pulled pork, which takes approximately 15 hours to cook, everybody who's tasted it is like, oh my God. So I got that wow factor on both sides. I can make people happy no matter what I do. I just got to get my wife to look at me that way a lot.
What's the website called?
OldManChristmas.com.
OldManChristmas.com. Go there.
Does anybody do websites? Because my website guy, like, is really lagging behind. I mean, some of the pictures on there are from when I had a fake beard.
Wow.
Which maybe, is about 10 years ago.
Maybe you can do an in-kind kind of thing? Like,
yeah.
You send it for them? And...
Without a doubt. I'm up to bartering. No problem.
All right, cool. Thank you very much. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. They always sit me next to the fireplace. So thanks for having it over there.
No problem. Thanks a lot.
No problem.
And thanks to John.
John.
And Nikki Columbus's virtuosic. And thank you guys. We'll see you in the fall.
Oh, the cocktail.
So we have two votes. We have another one. Okay, so we have the Yule Brenner, we have the Apple Crack, and we have
Yule Regret It.
Alright, so votes for Apple Crack. Two. The Yule Brenner.
Yeah.
All right, how many of those you got? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 for the Yul Brynner, and the Yul regret it. This looks like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 30. And let me just point out that this is like, I think, the third cocktail that this guest has actually managed to successfully make. The two of them together, and one of them's a guest. But okay, that drink is now officially called the You'll Regret It.
There's never been such a day.